A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven,
concentrate
on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 362. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Good Omens. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
We are continuing our discussion about a 6-part adaptation of the novel Good Omens by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. And this was from Amazon Prime in 2019, and also from the BBC with their broadcast in 2020. And that was a co-production between the two companies. It has a huge cast and a quite impressive screen representation of this humorous novel about the final battle between good and evil, or between heaven and hell.
It is indeed, yes. And we talked a little bit last time about some of the story elements. Let's do a few more. Get into it a bit more detail. As we've said, the arrival of the Antichrist on Earth, a boy called Adam, has set the forces of good and evil on course for the final conflict, which they all seem to want so much. And it's all going to happen when the boy turns 11 and his hellhound will appear. And of course, then we do get a hellhound on screen, a CGI'd hellhound, which then transforms rather charmingly into a small terrier dog, which Adam immediately decides to call Dog, because what else would you call it, Brian?
Well, of course, it is straightforward. The four horsemen of the apocalypse are summoned to their duty by an international delivery driver who shows up in all corners of the world and hands them their various tools of office, which is sort of the message for them to report to duty, so to speak. During Adam's 11 years living on Earth, the demon Crowley and the angel Aziraphale have realized that they like Earth as it is, and they don't really want the end of days. And they together conspire to influence the child, who they believe is the son of Satan, to become a good person.
But of course, as we've said, they have the wrong child. They are working with the son of the American ambassador, a boy strangely called Warlock. But of course, it's the wrong baby, the wrong son. Adam, of course, is off in the woods having fun and games with his gang, meeting the descendants of medieval witches who turned out to be extraordinarily good at prophecies. We haven't even really mentioned Agnes Nutter and her importance in the story. And of course, at his 11th birthday party, or rather at Warlock's 11th birthday party, there are Aziraphale and Crowley waiting for the arrival of the hellhound, not realizing that there's a small dog turning up in a woods so quite some distance from them.
Yes, indeed. So lots of things going on, and moving towards the final events of the world as they may be, but also looking back at things in the past as we go on.
Now, we've mentioned last time that there were all sorts of attempts to get Good Omens made for film or television, and that a variety of these projects foundered along the way. But of course, while all that was happening, there were some other versions of Good Omens being made.
Yes, there was a BBC Radio 4 adaptation in 2014, and that had Mark Heap from Spaced as Aziraphale and Peter Serafinowicz of Look Around You fame, and also the star of the Amazon Prime live-action version of The Tick. He was there as Crowley. And there was also a nice cameo of Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman as a pair of traffic cops. And that is available on CD for about £18 right now. and it's available on Audible as well.
And we were talking a little bit about that radio production. You can still find the BBC Radio 4 website for the production online. Unfortunately, it doesn't have the episodes anymore, but you can listen to some clips, including Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett doing their traffic cops. And it had, you know, this show on television had quite the cast, but that one also, some impressive names. Nick Briggs from Big Finish is in it. Patterson Joseph, who we remember from Neverwhere, is in there. There's even Simon Jones. Arthur Dent himself shows up as part of the cast. So it attracts some great acting casts, whatever production is done, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And briefly, you get Josie Lawrence, who I remember from the early days of Whose Line Is It Anyway, as Agnes Nutter in both radio and TV versions.
Yes, how nice that she got to play both versions. Of course, it's also been done on theatre, on stage as well. We know of two productions, one from Glasgow in 2013, and then it was done as a musical on stage in Sydney, Australia in 2017. Don't really know much more about those productions at all, or whether, you know, they were filmed or anything like that. But we do know it was done. And as you say, Brian, the radio version is available to purchase if you want to track it down.
As far as I know, there is no soundtrack available for the musical version, which is too bad. I would love to listen to that.
Indeed. Now, we also like to talk about spin-offs from the shows we cover. A couple to mention here. There's a nice hardcover companion book to the TV series. That was called The Nice and Accurate Good Omens TV Companion, Your Guide to Armageddon, and the series based on the best-selling novel by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. It contains costume designs, behind-the-scenes photos, interviews with the cast, and of course with Neil Gaiman, set designs, and very much more. I do remember when the show was first being broadcast on Amazon that all the bookshops I was going into locally at the time had this displayed quite prominently. It was a quite big, prestigious production and a big, prestigious book to go with it. You can still track that down. It's £18 over here, or you'll get it for $28 US or about $39 Canadian if you want to get hold of a copy.
And of course, the title there is a reference to a book within Good Omens, which was The Nice and Accurate Prophecies of Agnes Nutter. So, cute little reference there.
Indeed.
And in May of 2020, which was the 30th anniversary of the publication of the book, some of the team reunited virtually for a 3-minute short called Good Omens Lockdown. That was written by Neil Gaiman, directed by Douglas McKinnon, and had the voices of David Tennant and Michael Sheen. So a good chunk of the team coming together to do something for a lockdown, which was nice to see.
And you can find that on YouTube, freely available, and I've listened to it and it is quite funny indeed. A nice little lockdown project.
Very nice. So we should talk a bit about the response to the TV version. It was a big hit, both with fans of the book who were very pleased with how well it was done and how faithful it was, but also to new viewers who very much enjoyed it and it was very popular. And there was sort of a new audience of younger genre fans who became fans of Good Omens through the television production.
Yes, and they really took it to their hearts as well. And I think the characters of Aziraphale and Crowley, possibly partly because of the actors playing them, but they soon became fan favourites. And I was interested in this because of my two readings of the novel itself. And the TV show and the second reading, very much it's Aziraphale and Crowley's story. And back when we used to have conventions, they became quite the popular costumes for cosplayers. And as I say, it was first broadcast on Amazon in May 2019. August 2019, I think you were at Dragon Con in Atlanta, Brian, and you saw quite a few Good Omens cosplayers, I think.
Yes, I certainly did. I know some of them, but yeah, certainly. And That year, David Tennant was at DragonCon, and he was answering lots of questions about Good Omens as well.
And if you Google Good Omens cosplay, you will find tutorials, you'll find design ideas, you'll see lots of images of the fans cosplaying both as Aziraphale and Crowley, but also the Four Horsemen seems quite popular, and some of the other demonic characters from Hell. And you'll see David Tennant in photos with cosplayers, I presume, again, taken from Dragon Con. And I should point out that they were often gender swapped, so quite often female fans cosplaying as Aziraphale and Crowley, a pair of characters that really sort of broke out into the public imagination for a while, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And certainly you will see lots of that looking at photos online. And we should mention that there are certainly fan interpretations of the characters of Aziraphale and Crowley as a gay couple, sort of developing that relationship over time, and also as a friendship and as different kinds of platonic relationships. So it is nice to see those different fan interpretations. They can, you know, often be quite helpful to people. Neil Gaiman has resisted some of that, saying that they're not human characters and they don't have any sexuality because of that.
Which, okay, but, you know, we're quite happy with whatever however the fans choose to interpret these two characters. They are two great characters. Their friendship developing over the centuries, which we see in the show, is quite wonderful. And like I say, they were the sort of predominant features of the story for me. So I was delighted to see all these different versions portrayed in cosplay. But also, as you say, the fan reaction to them and the fan interpretation of their relationship was great as well.
Yes, having lots of different interpretations is always good, as far as I'm concerned.
Indeed. So let's turn from one very positive response to the show, let's turn to a negative response to the show. As you can perhaps imagine, for a show dealing with heaven and hell and the final conflict between good and evil, it did run into a little bit of trouble with at least one Christian organization, an American organization called Return to Order, who managed to collect 20,000 signatures on a petition to get Netflix to cancel the series. They cited Good Omens as being blasphemous because of the depiction of the skin color of Adam and Eve, the fact that God was played by a woman, and of course the idea that demons could be portrayed in a good or even humorous light, and therefore that was supposedly making Satanism appear attractive and even funny.
Yes, indeed. And Netflix responded in good humor to this by saying that they would not make any more Good Omens. And of course, this Christian organization had petitioned the wrong streaming service. It was an Amazon Prime show, and they were petitioning Netflix not to make any more of it. So there was a lot of humor in response to that, and this petition was not taken very seriously by anyone, as far as I can tell. And I think this is a case where you know you have something worthwhile when it upsets people, and I think we can make that the official British Invaders position on this.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, obviously we don't want to upset anybody's religious beliefs, but getting quite so upset about a TV show, and as you say, Brian, petitioning the wrong streaming service. And then sometimes these big companies, their social media presence can be quite funny about these things, and Netflix tweeting that they promised not to make any more Good Omens, and then Neil Gaiman retweeting that, I believe. It was quite an amusing online kerfuffle for a while, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was quite memorable.
So it's that time. It's time for our own final conflict discussion, good versus evil, as we go through the goods and bads of Good Omens. So, Brian, our own thoughts. How would you like to start us off with the positives about this show?
Well, there's a lot to say. This was a great show. It was very well done. I think the performances of those two main characters, and this is zooming into one particular thing, but David Tennant and Michael Sheen were spectacular in this. They were really good. And their performance and also the writing of those characters was great. And it was something that you don't see something done quite as well as that in this style that often. So that was really, really nice and really enjoyable having that throughout.
It was fantastic. Michael Sheen, David Tennant, two great actors, two great roles for them. The friendship they develop is fantastic. David Tennant, as you say, is this sort of snake-hipped lounge lizard character in black and red, wearing his variety of sunglasses to conceal his snake pupils. Michael Sheen is the sort of bumbling Aziraphale in his lovely bookshop with his sort of rather temptation towards a good dessert from time to time. And the pair of them feeding the ducks in St. James's Park. It's all just delightful and two great performances to look at.
Yeah, it really shines.
And of course, we have to mention the rest of the cast, which is enormous. There are so many characters in Good Omens, and they got so many great actors turning up in a way, often to just do their small walk-on parts, but all of them doing great stuff and clearly having fun doing it. I did enjoy John Hamm as a sort of like a fierce Gabriel ready to go to war for heaven. Derek Jacobi turning up as the sort of voice of God's spokesperson, Metatron. It's great stuff, isn't it?
Yes, it really was very strong in the casting. And it helps that it's a story that has so many characters in it. So some of them, like Derek Jacobi, really were sort of cameos. But there were others, like seeing Miranda Richardson in there, for instance, where you get, you know, minor character, but you get a fair bit from her. And there were a lot of those with a lot of great cast.
Yes, I mean, we talk about relationships because there's quite a few build up in the course of the six episodes. And the relationship we see between Michael McKean and Miranda Richardson is lovely as well. We can't really say too much about the cast. It's just tremendous throughout.
Yes, and I was glad that they had sort of nearly 6 hours, you know, six episodes here to give something to everyone. Because I think if they had done this in three or four episodes, they could have squeezed the story in, but they wouldn't have been able to give something to all of those characters. And it would have felt cramped. It wouldn't have worked as well, I think.
This is a six-part show that I didn't want there to be any less of at all, Brian. Quite the opposite. I could have happily taken more of this. Writing, you mentioned the importance of having Neil Gaiman, who understood the source material so well and had this promise to keep to Terry Pratchett. His writing for this show, I guess, we're going to be fans of, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. He had already written for television a number of times by this point, so the medium was certainly not new to him. And, you know, he was one of the original writers. So, yes, I think the writing was very good for this indeed. It was quick in pacing, but still gave you lots of things along the way. It had a real epic feel to it, but still had a nice driving storyline to it and lots of good characters. So yeah, I think it really worked in terms of writing.
What about the production values and the look of the show for our next item on the agenda?
I don't really have any complaints. It looked very good. Now, I do wonder if some of this will become a little dated over time. Like, it's still quite new, so it hasn't yet, and I may try to look at this again in the not-too-distant future. One of the few things in the negative columns, I would say, is I wonder if the look of it will become dated because of the effects or because of the styles and so on. At the moment, it looks fantastic.
Yes, it does. I thought it looked great. And I think it's probably, in a way, good that the various productions were delayed until the CGI was perhaps ready for it on television, because everything about it looks great. I think the costumes are a triumph. The special effects work great. It just looks like a very high quality production with this great cast wearing great costumes and great hair and makeup. It looks fantastic, I think.
Yeah, it's a big budget and you can see it all on screen. It's, you know, well used.
And I should say, I loved the animated title sequence and the music as well. That was great.
Yes, that was all done very well too. The look and the feel of this, I think, helped set the tone of this sort of fantastical world. I think they did a nice job making it so that a lot of things feel sort of real and ordinary, but when you start seeing bits of magic pop up in different places, it isn't jarring at all. And I think the look and the feel of this helps with that a lot.
And also, if you know the novel, you'll know that the demon Crowley is fond of playing Queen songs in his Bentley. And I was, you know, luckily they had those songs, as you say, Brian, they secured the rights and could use them for the show. So there's quite a lot of Queen music and it all works great for some of the sequences, particularly with Crowley driving at breakneck speed in his lovely Bentley car.
Yes, it does. It actually felt a little bit reminiscent of the sort of films of the 1980s that had Queen soundtracks, you know, things like Highlander and Flash Gordon, where you had Queen coming in and setting the tone there. Even though these were obviously not original works for it, they were some of the popular things by Queen, but it was a little reminiscent of that for me, and I thought that was really nice.
It was indeed. I mean, I suppose you could say that Queen music is perhaps so commonly heard in various productions. I don't think the band have had any problems licensing the use of their songs. So you might be perhaps a little bit fed up of Queen music. I think it works perfectly. I thought it was great.
Yes, I haven't heard that much of it used in this way, sort of in a newer production with, you know, a string of their hits being used in sort of very plot appropriate ways. So I thought it worked really well.
So lots of great work going on in this production. Did we have anything in the negative column, Brian?
Well, I did mention that I wonder if some of the look will become dated, but apart from that, not really. It is in some places very high paced, and I noticed it as being sort of a really high-paced production, which I think works well for this. In some ways, I prefer things that are a little bit more measured or a little bit slower, but I think it definitely worked. So all in all, not a lot to say on the negative side.
Okay. We've mentioned a huge cast. You can listen to various podcasts of some of the cast being interviewed about their roles in this production. I listened to one with John Hamm, who said that he'd read the book when it came out and remembered it. And he was a big fan of the book. And you do get the slight impression, perhaps, that it is an awful lot of the friends of Terry Pratchett and the friends of Neil Gaiman all turning up to do their little bit, possibly in memory of Sir Terry. So there's, you know, you might say it could be a bit lovey in places. And it depends how you feel about that. Personally, I just thought it was great. I suspect that some of the cast were not perhaps getting their, might not be asking for their full rates. We don't know about that sort of thing, of course. But, you know, the budget for this cast would be astronomical, I would have thought, Brian.
Yeah, and it's quite possible that it was. And I think having this as a co-production between Amazon Prime and the BBC is quite important and made quite a big difference to things, because the BBC brings some expertise in doing this kind of drama and some of the costuming things and so on, and Prime brings some connections and expertise for doing sort of big epic type high budget things, but also brings that big budget for a big show.
Yes, probably it did. Yes, the Amazon budget undoubtedly helped the show. I will mention something I'd put in the outline, that even the final song that plays over the end credits of episode 6 is a version of A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, which is specifically mentioned in the book. And of course, it was sung for this production by Neil Gaiman's friend and longtime collaborator, the singer Tori Amos. But again, I didn't even mind that, Brian, because I thought it was a lovely rendition and it was specifically from the book as well.
Yes, and it fit the tone of what they were doing in that sequence very well. It wasn't so much that the song was right and the singer was not quite right for it. The recording of it they had with Tori Amos was right for that scene. It worked really well.
It was perfect. Anything else in the negative column at all?
I don't think so. All in all, this was a very strong production.
It's the second time I've watched it. I watched it when it first came out, and I've watched it again now, and I enjoyed it even more this time. So yeah, it is a very good production.
So I think it's time to get to our recommendations. Eamon, would you like to start with this one?
People know where I'm going. I loved Good Omens. I was a fan of the book. This is an incredibly faithful and in fact loving adaptation by Neil Gaiman, with an astonishing cast all doing great work. Everything about this show is charming, particularly that central friendship between Aziraphale and Crowley, with brilliant performances by David Tennant and Michael Sheen. So I'm going to say it's a very strong recommendation for me, particularly if you've got Amazon Prime. It's, you know, easy to watch. And if you haven't, it's £6 over here for the DVD, £1 an episode. It's got to be worth it. So yes, it's a strong thumbs up from me. From yourself in Canada, Brian?
I am going to fall in line with that and say absolutely this is recommended. Strong recommendation from me. Very solid production. Well written, well put together. And absolutely, you know, if you have Amazon Prime, watch it that way. If you just have an Amazon account and you don't have Prime, you may have a 30-day trial for Amazon Prime available to you. And this is something that might be worth using that trial for. And of course, DVD and Blu-ray is also available. So yeah, strongly recommended from both of us for sure.
Great stuff. Do please tell us about your own viewing experience with Good Omens and, of course, the book as well, and maybe even the radio version.
Absolutely. So, in summary, Good Omens introduces us to the demon Crowley and the angel Aziraphale and their ongoing friendship and developing relationship, which dates back from the time of Adam and Eve, going all the way up to the present day, where the end of days seems to be approaching, and the Antichrist has been born, and at the age of 11 will cause the beginning of things and the beginning of the end of the world. Only there is confusion about babies being swapped around, and the Antichrist is off in a quiet English village and not the child of this American diplomat as planned, and all sorts of confusion goes on because of that. And we lead towards a conclusion that will involve angels, demons, the Antichrist, and more.
Great stuff and great fun. And come back next time for more great stuff, when we're going to be looking at a BBC adaptation of E.E. Nesbitt's classic, The Phoenix and the Carpet. There are a couple of versions of this, and we've decided, after some confusion on my part, to go for the 1976 BBC production, and that's what we'll be talking about when we come back next time.
Yes, that should be a fun one to talk about for sure. Until then, you can find all of our episodes at BritishInvaders.com, and if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our group there, and we always have lots of good discussions going on there.
And indeed, you will also find us at vognetwork.com, which is the Voice of Geeks Network, where you'll find British Invaders as part of that team. Check out all the fun at vognetwork.com. Tell them and Brian and Eamon said hello.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, until next time, thank you very much for listening. And this is Eamon in England also signing off.